Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the CBI's Growth Podcast. As you can probably tell, I am not my co-host, Joe Marshall. I'm Simon Glassy-Aldridge, Chief Campaigns Director at the CBI. Joe is unfortunately away this week, so you're stuck with me. So what I've done is I've got some of my friends along to keep me company throughout the episode. We've got loads to bring you following the budget and some of our latest thinking on people and skills from our Future of Work conference, which I did not want you missing out on. So without further ado, and so you're not just listening to me, I'm going to welcome Katie Riccina, our Head of Economic Policy, to keep me company. Hello, Katie.
Hi, Simon.
How's it going?
Yeah, pretty good. How are you?
I'm all right, thanks. We had a pretty big week last week with the budget.
Just a bit.
And obviously, you and I were talking about this, weren't we? It was going, the budget week itself is obviously a massive week. But the hours and hours over weeks and weeks and months and months before that are quite extensive, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, people here call it the run-up to Christmas, right? Budget is our Christmas day, and you've got kind of the prep that goes into it, and then we get there, and then suddenly it all happens, and it's like everything comes together, all the presents are open, hopefully we've got some great gifts, sometimes a bit of disappointment, but you have to, you know, measure it.
Ah, I love that. And I always find that when I make a Christmas dinner or a roast or something, the amount of hours that goes into cooking it, and then people take 20 minutes to eat it, and then, you know,
it's all gone. Yeah. Sometimes they're like, thanks very much. Sometimes could have done better.
Exactly. Well, that's a great way of describing it. So the budget, listeners will remember us discussing our budget asks on the last episode when we were joined by Louise Helen. We focused on capital investment, on childcare and on green growth, essentially hitting three important areas that we wanted to see action on to help the economy growing, you know, encouraging that much needed business investment, getting more people who want to be in work back into work to help labour and skills shortages, and going to make sure that we can make the most of those growth opportunities in future and current sectors like green. So if we think about it as Christmas presents, as you have described, mm-hmm. or actually we're getting into Ramadan, so it's Eid presents.
Yep, yep.
Getting results on 2 out of 3 isn't bad. You know, there are some presents under that Ramadan tree, Eid tree, Christmas tree. We do Ramadan and Eid trees in our house, just for the case anyone else doesn't do that. But that's pretty good going, right?
Yeah, so there were some gifts for sure. So I'd say 2 out of 3. I mean, we'll get onto this, but maybe next week we could get 3 out of 3. So let's see. But yeah, what we saw, so on the big ones, 3 years of full expensing now to offset the rising corporation tax and replace the super deduction. Obviously, that's super important to help firms with their investment because it unlocks kind of cash flow. You're getting that back in year one. So by year two, you can start with your next lot of investments. That's really great. Side point. The Chancellor obviously has not made this permanent just yet. That is something we're really looking for. So we are already back banging the drum on that. But also some great measures that we saw on supporting people back into work, which, as we know, is one of the key issues at the moment, like kind of affecting the economy and essentially growth, right? So we've got childcare, extra funding for providers, changes to universal credit, so you're not getting that back in arrears, which is really useful, and also extending provision up to 9 months. From 9 months up to kind of 4 years old, which is fab to get people back into work. Health side, additional funding. So that's on areas like mental health and musculoskeletal, which I can never pronounce.
Musculoskeletal.
There you go.
I had to think about that.
You said it really well, though.
Thanks.
You'd make Lydia
much.
Proud. And then occupational health subsidy pilot, which is something we've been calling for, and also a launch of a consultation into how businesses can use the tax system to better incentivize occupational health support. So that is great. Skills, bit of a mixed bag. So that was maybe the present that we wanted, but wanted a little bit more. So we got the returnships, which is kind of like an apprenticeship for over 50s to kind of encourage people to come back to work if they want to. So that's great because anything that gets people into the workforce where they want to work is, you know, we're all in favor of that. But I think, let's be honest, everyone's favorite, the apprenticeship levy, that was not mentioned. And I think when going through the feedback already from members, that's the number one thing that members are saying. What about this? So something we're definitely coming back to. The other area was a bit of a hole, which was on the green side, which you've already mentioned. So again, I think that was very much looking at energy efficiency. So as we're looking ahead to the winter, how can we make sure we've got energy efficiency for households?
Yeah, so we're actually reducing the demand on our energy supply. Yeah.
Exactly. And also reducing the demands on the taxpayer, essentially, because if we can get energy efficiency, it stops the need to have these kind of government bailouts with energy bills all the time. So that's on households, but also commercial buildings. Yeah. And then the Inflation Reduction Act, so this big package that America has put out, kind of 500 billion of spending and tax breaks. How are we going to respond to that? Now, obviously, we know on the efficiency side, the government has set up a task force. They had its first meeting on autumn statement. So I think eyes to see what comes out of that. And on ERA, as we're calling it, the Inflation Reduction Act.
Oh, I've been calling it IRA.
Oh, no. Oh, I've been going ERA. Maybe I'll go IRA. Okay.
I think we should maybe listen to Joe Biden and see what he says.
Yeah, let's see what he says.
Sorry, keep going.
But yeah, basically seeing, I think that's to come, isn't it? So as we've said, there's kind of
a moment. Just on this one, this green growth, as you said, it was the kind of present under the tree that we didn't necessarily get. But we are expecting I keep calling it a green day, and then it kind of makes me have to hold everything in to not make a really terrible gag about like time of your life and stuff like that.
Yeah.
A green day, a green moment, whatever it might be, in just over a week's time, where, you know, government are saying that they are going to be launching their response, their net zero growth strategy, energy security, green finance, all of those strategies in one hit. Because one thing that we're kind of working with government on is you have to have certainty if you're able to invest. You have to have a direction of travel. There is money available. Businesses are really keen to do it. They just don't know where. So it does seem that they do want to respond to the big push on green investment in the US and in the EU. But it's that competitiveness point, isn't it? That's the thing that's really important here, right?
Yes, so I think you've hit the nail on the head with the certainty point, right? So brace yourself. We've already been warned by Treasury officials that there's going to be a lot of detail to wade through next week. So we'll be digesting all of that for businesses. And
that is what you're here summing for, and we appreciate it.
But yeah, be warned, essentially, get the glasses at the ready. But I mean, I think what we know is that the Chancellor is looking closely at IRA. He's also looking closely at the EU response. But I think what I always hear from members, and I think you'll be the same, is I've not heard a business leader turn around and say the UK needs to match the level of subsidies or tax breaks that the US or potentially the EU might do with its state aid rules, whatever it might be. What they're saying is we want certainty, like you said. So certainty of the technologies and the green markets we want to go for. Do we want to be the leaders in CCUS, so that carbon capture and storage? Do we want to be leaders in hydrogen? Which type of hydrogen? You know, there's a whole measure of things. Yeah. They also want certainty of the tax landscape and regulation. So we're seeing some great work with the balance review, where we're looking at kind of how we can set the tone for regulation of the future, but also for those that kind of technologies are already in existence, maybe let's not fill around with them too much so that we know where we land when it comes to regulation. And then there's also direction and certainty of policy direction. So what are the things we want to invest in? That's how we'll attract FDI. That's what gives confidence. And sometimes having that certainty is actually almost more important than kind of the subsidy packages you get.
I think that's exactly right. It's also, you know, as you say, businesses don't want us to be matching pound to dollar and pound to euro. We're not going to be able to do that. No. And that's okay. But we have a lot of strengths in the UK. We have a lot of expertise, whether that's in new technology or in green finance, all of those kinds of things. So it's about making sure that those areas of success can be successful, you know, and they can continue to build, continue to grow, do that research, all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So that is really important. And, you know, I'm sure we can do a little bit more of a deep dive once you've read every single document.
Yeah. I mean, we already have a bit of a test that we're looking out for.
Okay.
So obviously energy efficiency, we want to see something on that. Supporting development of decarb tech. So again, we'll look for the hydrogen business models, cluster sequencing. We think there's something coming out after they gave like 20 billion at the budget last year. Last week, feels like a year ago on CCUS.
This is how many hours of work you've done.
Exactly. And then unlocking private capital, which is where you see the kind of green finance piece come in. So overall, we want to make sure that there are the transition roadmaps that they did publish last year, that the goalposts aren't changing, that we're still on course for those. So that is the kind of test to see if next week is successful or not, from our point of view.
Okay, so let's stick a pin in that one. Let's come back to it. Just coming back to the budget that was last week, not last year.
Yeah.
we put a poll out to our members straight away to get their snap reaction, right? And we're still continuing to collect that information. The Chancellor kind of badged this as a budget for growth and a budget for business. What did members think?
Okay, so yeah, as you said, we did a snap poll. Really positive overall. I say really positive. The official mark is somewhat positive. So 58% of respondents said that it was somewhat positive. There was a net positive 63%. But let's compare this to what the net negative was, which was 10%. Mm. So I think that is a roaring success, to be honest, in terms of business feeling like there was actually something in there for them that was going to help stimulate growth. I mean, I've already mentioned it, but the big whole apprenticeship levy. But I think the other area where there's a bit of concern in terms of the growth piece is what we're doing on R&D tax credits for SMEs. So already
that definitely was missing, wasn't it?
Yeah. So I think obviously what we've seen is that the government did kind of create a new SME R&D tax credit scheme if you are an R&D intensive SME. But to be blunt, the threshold is really high to access that. So I think, and also it's less generous than what they currently have under the scheme. So up until April, it is still less generous after that. So I think we need to see about what we can do to incentivize R&D investment from SMEs, especially if we're going to go for this innovation first economy, which we know the Chancellor and PM super keen on. But in terms of what members were literally loving, so we had full expensing, 66%, thought that was great. Expansion of the childcare provision, again, 66%, and energy price guarantee being extended, again, 63%. So I think what that shows there is that also business is really conscious of how these things are impacting people. And also the fact that people are struggling right now and there's a lot of pressure on households. So it's interesting to see that alongside full expensing and kind of capital investment, which is traditionally business heavy thing to be in favour of, they were also looking at some of the social side, which is also economic infrastructure, like the childcare and then also the household energy guarantee.
Yeah, because this is their workforce, it's their customers, it's kind of their employees. It's really important stuff. It's not just about the full expensing. It's about the whole full social picture, as you say.
Yeah. And then other areas which they were kind of interested in, so if we put a marker down, investment zones, about 48% of them really welcomed these. And I think we're already in kind of contact with the Treasury and DLUHC officials on how we create these. And they have said to us actually that CBI's clusters work has been really instrumental to how they're framing these investment zones. So definitely want to watch see how those develop. And then also kind of measures with development of CCUS. The fuel duty freeze actually was pretty popular, which is an interesting one because we'll need to see how we start looking at the transition away from that. But I think, again, that's one where people are looking at the cost of living right now and saying, okay, we recognise we need to transition, but for now, this was quite useful to have that freeze.
Yeah, okay. So that was, you know, overall net positive.
Yeah.
But as we've been talking about, you've covered it, so I'm not going to make you do it again, but it is worth just double mentioning the fact that we were missing anything on the apprenticeship levy and skills. And we're going to shortly be joined by Matthew Percival, our Director of Changing Workforce, and we are definitely going to be talking about this more. And we do need to see something from government on how we are kind of bringing together that skills and workforce challenge. And then Green Day.
The moment.
Let's stick a pin in it. We'll come back to how we feel about that one afterwards. So do you think that's enough? Do you think that's enough to get growth going?
I think it is a step in the right direction, but it's not the final destination, as it were. So what we've seen is them start to put kind of the flags down. So they launch Great British Nuclear, which I've already heard firms saying that that's making them interested. You know, it's something to invest in. It's part of a green technology. There's carbon capture utilization storage. So CCUS, they've committed 20 billion to that at the budget over the next 20 years. Firms are interested to see, is that going to be front loaded? When are we going to start to see that money? It's of interest. So those are giving, as we said earlier, those like signals, the technologies we want to get into. We've said it before, but the capital allowances, we know it's key to stimulate growth. But if we want that long-term growth, we do need to see it made permanent. So as soon as there is the fiscal headroom to do so, we need to have that permanent. We need the signal. You know, at the moment, it's set for 3 years, but kind of you take a big manufacturer, for example, aerospace, some of these big kind of industries, their investment pipelines are so much longer than 3 years.
Yeah, exactly. They don't have 3 year investment cycles. They have 7 to 10 year investment cycles. But on that, realistically, I think that's something that we're going to be pushing for in manifestos. So
Absolutely.
Both sides need to be coming up with their plans for what is the future of business investment. How do you, you know, how do you stimulate and change the trajectory of how businesses invest in the UK? Because it is on businesses as well, right? We have delivered some of their key asks. And yes, there are things missing. And I'm going to ask you what's on your desk post-budget in a minute. But it is on business to make sure they are making use of that unlocked workforce or making use of the successor to the super deduction.
Yeah, and of course there is also a bit of a promotion piece here, so not everyone is glued to the budget like we are and trawls through this, I know, shock, and trawls through the hundreds of pages of the Red Book. So there is also a role for, you know, the CBI and organizations to be showing business what is actually out there, what the government has delivered and what they can use and how it can help them. So when we're looking at these returnships or the childcare, actually how they put it into practice will be really key. I mean, on the positive, the OBR is no longer saying that we're going to enter a technical recession. But as I've said, households are still feeling the pinch. Like, we know energy prices are not coming down as significantly as they should anytime soon. So like, the pressure on growth is huge because this is how we're going to break these cycles.
Absolutely. And we're still in a high inflationary environment, and that doesn't appear to be drastically changing anytime soon.
No, I mean, food prices, we saw literally earlier this week, it's gone up to some of the highest, it was like 10 years or something like that. 45 years, I think, actually, is the highest they've been.
And that's why, just that is a thing to always come back to. That is why growth is important, because it's the pounds in people's pockets.
Yes.
It's people up and down the country who need the economic situation to change.
Yeah. And I was going to say, in fairness to the Chancellor, he did say he's coming back to some of the things in the autumn statement. So I don't think even he would say that he thought that the budget was job done.
Yeah.
I would hope, but I don't think. That's why he put the markers down for autumn statement.
Exactly. So, you know, autumn statement, you've said it. On your desk already?
It is on my desk. I'm already annoying colleagues going around, knocking their desks, saying, what are you thinking? So I think, I mean, this is where we kind of have to take a look now between what we're going to do for autumn statement, the things that the government of the day needs to really get on with, and some of the more ambitious things that we might say for manifesto and general election when we want to like wholesale reform of a system. So I think some of the things already on my mind, apprenticeship levy, but again,
you haven't mentioned that.
I know,
one,
I'll never mention it, right? So, but I think again, it's where you might take a twin approach. You might do what we think we can tweak to make things a bit easier now, and then in a manifesto, we'll pitch, right, this is how you really do it and kind of sort the whole system. Again, planning is another one that comes up a lot. We can't unlock investment if you've got the people and you've got the capital, but you can't get your planning permission sorted because you've got backlogs. You're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
Other things, again, I said on the R&D side, how are we going to stimulate R&D investment? So there's a few things in the pipeline, but we're very much taking time to digest. But member consultation will be starting within the next few weeks.
I know, so I'm be excited. Prepared. Yes, we are coming at you. Katie, thank you so much for coming and sharing your thoughts on budget with us. Is this the time to admit to you that because I knew you were doing it, I haven't actually looked at every single page of the Red Book?
No, that's completely fair. I'll do you a briefing note.
Thanks. Thanks for coming and goodbye.
Thanks for having me. Bye.
You've had us talking about healthcare, you've had us talking about childcare, and you've had us talking about the apprenticeship levy. All of these things that we were looking to work with government on for this budget to help businesses keep moving towards embracing the future of work. And we also hosted a conference recently on this very topic, our Future of Work conference, very topically named. And we put the challenge to the room that if we don't have the workforce and skills we need to prosper and to grow, how do we find it? And how do business leaders start leading the change rather than constantly chasing it? But we don't say these things without offering the practical support and advice to do just that. We are the CBI after all. So in a minute, I'm going to be joined by Matthew Percival, our Changing Workforce Program Director, to help break down some of the key takeaways from the conference. But first, let's listen to Sarah Thompson, Group HR Director at the Phoenix Group, to give a little taster of some of that advice.
So business and people strategy must be completely entwined, the double helix, or perhaps like strawberries and cream, salt and pepper, gin and tonic. You can have one without the other, but then it's never quite the same. And it's this alignment that I believe sets up any business for success in this so-called war for talent we've been hearing about. That's not to say that we always get it right or win every battle, and we can discuss approaches later. Today, our focus is on the challenges of the talent agenda and the complication that the world of work has irrevocably changed. Talent is, has always been, I think, the thing that any manager at any level has got at the top of their pile. But right now, vacancies and skill shortages are at a record level. And alongside this, the employee demand for meaningful work is growing, and rightly so. We're all worried about the labour shortages, that's understandable. But conversely, it's also true that we need an abundance rather than a scarcity mindset. Start with the view that the talent exists, but to benefit from it, we need to adapt. To challenge thinking, what truly are the key criteria for this role? To think about those who can be overlooked: women, older workers, different CVs or backgrounds. Diversity is good business. Development programs can be built. Nobody was born a pilot or an actuary.
Hi, Matthew. It's absolutely brilliant to have you here.
Hi, Simon. Great to be here.
So we've just heard from one of our members there about just how much business can do to help themselves when it comes to finding talent. But this is a really big challenge. And, you know, it's easy for us to sit here in a podcast studio and talk about it. But it is a bit easier said than done. So what were some of your key takeaways from the conference?
Gosh, so much to pack into one day. I think what I heard from our members about what they were taking away from the conference was that they had lots of conferences they could go to. They get sort of advice and tips on what other companies were doing. But what we were able to do a bit differently was to put it into that bigger economic and political context. And I think one of the things that we did to help them think about this was to point out what we see in some of our surveys. We get every business telling us, almost every business, something like 94%, I think it was, in our last education and skills survey, saying that they've got skills gaps at the moment. And every business thinks, I'm struggling to hire the people with the skills that I need. But when you put them all side by side and then think about trying to hire in a particular place, they're almost trying to hire every person three times over that's looking for a job at the moment. So you've got this challenge where a skills shortage for an individual company becomes a labour shortage overall. And that's really important for calibrating your business response to these shortages, because you can ask and challenge your HR team to go out there and recruit and retain better if the people are out there to be able to hire. But when you're in this super competitive labour market at the moment, you're also needing to get the whole business thinking. How are we able to do everything we can to create our capacity to grow? And that means, just as importantly, how do we help each person achieve more in their time at work, rather than just how do we bring more people in? Because if we're honest and we look back as a country, we've been over reliant on adding more people and people working more hours to grow, rather than pulling every lever that we possibly can on productivity. And this is a medium term challenge rather than just a brief blip. I think it was the Learning and Work Institute's research the other week said that they forecast that there were going to be 1.4 million people more leaving the labour market because they're due to retire than people leaving school and entering the labour market. So we've got some real long-term demographic changes here that are affecting how easy it is to hire. And I think it was Sir Trevor Phillips at our conference who summed it up. He said the issue was too important to leave it to HR. And I think I'd go one step further than that and say that we were able to help businesses see that if they just left it to their HR teams to try and solve their current shortages, they were probably going to fail, because the businesses that will succeed will be those that are also focusing their whole business on improving productivity rather than just trying to hire another person.
Totally agree with you that this is a whole organization effort. So if you were to be in front of a board, what would you be asking them to look at?
I think there are three buckets of things that every business can think about. The first is hiring, the second is training, and the third is productivity. So in this hiring space, I think the first thing that to remember is you've got to think about retaining, not just hiring. Because if you're only thinking about how you attract the next person, but you're also neglecting what you're doing to retain your current workforce, you'll find people leaving as quickly as you're hiring, because all of your competitors are trying to hire too and they're after your staff. So you've got to be thinking about retention as well as recruitment. And we've had people talking about EVPs, employee value propositions, more than at any time that I can remember. I'm reviewing our EVP at the moment. Seems to be the standard number one action whenever I speak to any HR directors.
Because it's that contract, isn't it, between the employer and the employee? And what are you providing to each other. It's not a one-way street anymore.
If I'm thinking about the areas where I'd push businesses to go even further than they are at the moment, I think flexible working definitely falls into that bracket. It is the sort of thing where when we look at some of those groups of people that could be more active in the labour market than they are at the moment, if you're somebody who's out of work because of caring responsibilities, although of course we really welcome the childcare announcements that we were just speaking about that will help with some of that. But if you're out with caring responsibilities that can be adult social care as well, or if you're out because you've got a health problem or a disability, then often the availability of flexible working can be the difference between whether you apply for a job or not, and people not being sure whether or not we'll offer that flexibility is a reason that they don't apply for the job in the first place. So you don't even know that they're interested and would be willing to do your job because they didn't get in touch with you. So how do you make sure your job adverts are promoting the flexibility that you offer rather than just being confident that if somebody asks us, then we'll tell them we're open to it? We've got to be a bit more forthcoming than that. On training, we're in an odd environment now. Well, I say odd, it's not really odd, it's more different. We've got some results in our survey that have flipped. It used to be a lot more confidence that people were able to hire and training was very difficult to do. But now hiring's so difficult that we've got more businesses saying they're confident they can train to develop the skills they need in their business than they can hire people who are already trained. And I think that goes with the grain of a lot of what we're seeing in the labour market at the moment, which is if you've got people whose skills are pretty close to what you need and a bit of training could help them do a new job within your business and to move up and progress, one, people seeing some development, they're more likely to stay with your organisation than if there's no development and progression for them, you've invested in them. But two, it's going to be significantly easier to upskill your own people rather than to try and hire somebody else in a super competitive labour market. And then in my third bucket on productivity, there's a few things I'd say here. So adopting technology, thinking about innovating in terms of your working practices as well. You know, I've heard some great examples we heard at the conference of companies who, some of them were forced to redesign the way that they do certain things by the pandemic because of the social distancing restrictions that were in place. And some of them found that they were more efficient, so they kept them. Some great examples there we're hearing about. And then I think the other element of this is your people practices and management capability within the organization, and particularly there's a big skills gap at the moment where we've got a lot more hybrid working happening in the sorts of jobs, you know, like our jobs, where they're ones where you can be at home. I'm at home recording this at the moment. You can be on location or at home for various different aspects of your role. It's different to manage a hybrid or a remote team compared to manage a team that's right in front of you. And there's a whole load of managers in the economy at the moment still feeling quite detached from their roles. Not, you know, it's a very different job to the one that they knew before, and have we helped them gain the skills to be an effective manager in these new contexts or not? So hiring, training and productivity, three buckets, an awful lot of questions to think about, but which answer is more relevant is going to depend on each individual business.
Yeah, which is so important. And I think what I found really interesting about the conference is I had conversations with both Gillian Keegan, Education Secretary, and Angela Rayner, Shadow Secretary for the Future of Work. We had them on stage, they were doing speeches and conversations. It was brilliant. But what I found really interesting about it was that politicians are very much on the same page in terms of realizing the link between people and skills. Those are not separate conversations, and they are absolutely essential for economic growth. And they both were very clear that you can't do it without business. So Angela was all about ideas that businesses can share to push them on. And Gillian was more about challenging businesses to engage more with their initiatives on offer to support with reskilling. So we haven't spoken too much. I mean, you and I have spoken for many, many hours on it. But in this podcast, we have not spoken too much about the need for businesses to step up on the reskilling front. But it is the other really important part of the equation, isn't it?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And you're right to pick me up, if you like, on reskilling, because the reason you've said that, you know, all of our conversations are about the nature of the training that's needed, the nature of the skills and learning in our economy and how that's changing. So I had training as my second bucket on things that the board should be looking at. Our research says 9 in 10 people are needing to add to their skills, add at least one new skill by 2030. It's 1 in 6 who need to retrain. So we've got an awful lot more people who need to add something to their skill set rather than change it, even a significant proportion. And I think even when I say retraining, people overestimate how much change is involved. I think often there's an image of, if I need to retrain, it's because I haven't got any valuable skills anymore or experiences. It feels like you're starting again, which makes it feel really big and daunting. And it really doesn't need to be, because when we define retraining, it's actually more like changing 25%, 30% of your skills or more.
Yeah, you and I quite often, well, we have two examples that we use, one of which is Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, which I'm not sure works in this one. The other one is my dad, right? He's a mechanic and he learned to fix internal combustion engines, and then he didn't have to completely retrain, but then electric vehicles became a thing and cars got computers and he had to learn all of these new skills, but not exactly as you say. He didn't completely learn everything. He had to learn bits and pieces, right? And it wasn't an entirely new course. It was little bits and on the job.
Yeah, you're right. And I think it's pretty accepted now. People say a job for life is gone, don't they? We all have multiple careers throughout our working lives. But our skills system is still built a little bit too much like we have skills for life, or that the learning we need to do is these big transitions to do a completely different job to the one we've got, and where we don't already have most of the skills that we'll need to be able to do those jobs. It's one of the reasons why when I was in Parliament this week talking about the lifelong loan entitlement that the government's creating, I was able to be really positive about how that particular policy is trying to get at a few things that are going with the grain of the change in the economy and skills. It's that we're needing to think as much as businesses about the skills of our existing workers and adults who will need to keep learning throughout their careers, as about attracting young people and giving the next generation the skills that we'll need. And it's about needing to help people learn in bite-sized chunks repeatedly throughout their careers rather than just in whole qualifications. And I think that then comes through to why we get such a strong reaction to the apprenticeship levy from our members. And again, we've been talking about the budget and some of the things that we didn't see. We didn't see any changes around the apprenticeship levy. And really what the businesses, so many of our members are looking for is the ability to be able to spend their whole training budget on the skills that their workforce needs, and not for it to be a debate about apprenticeships or anything else. It's about apprenticeships and everything else, and getting businesses spending even more money than they are at the moment on training, because that's what we need. Our research saying it's probably about a £13 billion a year gap to be able to bridge our skills needs, more than we're currently spending. That's a 25% increase, and a large part of that is going to need to come from business investment. So what we really need is a conversation ahead of the next general election about how are we going to create the environment in which businesses spend an awful lot more money than they are at the moment on skills, and create the environment to be able to unlock that investment.
Apprenticeships are great, but not everything is an apprenticeship. And having a bit of flex to make sure that businesses, employers and employees can get the skills and the training that they need for the future is certainly important. So with that, thank you very much, Matthew. I'm going to bring our whistle stop tour of all things future of work to a close with a clip from Simon Lambert, Chief Learning Officer at another CBI member, Microsoft, talking about digital skills. The one thing everybody was talking about is vital for businesses to embrace if we are going to achieve that much needed economic growth. Thank you, Matthew. Over to Simon.
At Microsoft, we are very much in the belief that digital skills are fundamental to economic growth, inclusive economic growth especially. And with the pace of digital transformation, you know, every company has to think of themselves as a digital company or a tech company now, which means that, you know, skilling is a permanent requirement of work. And so in my role as CLO, I get to not only obviously do the work within our organization, but I get to talk to, you know, our customers and our partners about, you know, some of the challenges they're facing around this topic. And I think there's kind of three key challenges that seem to be consistent when I talk to our ecosystem. The first is how can I enable my current workforce in digital and technical skills? The second one is, how can I find, recruit and retain the next wave of technical talent? And the third thing is, and in the current economic climate, how can I do both of those with an accelerated impact? And I think there are kind of four main areas, I think, that seem to be emerging when we talk to, certainly when we look at our own business, but also when we talk to our customers and our partners. And I think the first is really about how organizations are thinking about creating the right environment for their people to be able to learn and grow. And that really comes down to what kind of learning culture, what kind of culture do you have within your organization, which can really enable people to have the space, the time, and give permission for them to learn. And that's not just about the culture, it's also about the tools that you kind of make available to use, and also, you know, how you nurture those communities. So that first one is around culture. I think the second challenge is around how do we encourage the industry to think differently about talent. And in many ways, if you think about the average life expectancy of a skill now being less than 5 years, and the requirement for continued learning, you know, looking for that next wave of talent is going to basically mean you're going to have to go into very different places. And so, you know, we work a lot on things like apprenticeships, on things like digital skills, boot camps, to really try and identify how we can find those people who haven't necessarily been given the opportunity. And so that kind of talent piece is central to the challenge. I think the third piece, which is relevant to as you, Vicky, is like that, how can industry and academia create much stronger ties when it comes to creating and fulfilling the needs of business? And I think, you know, we see what we want to make sure is that students come out of their further or higher education courses actually having the skills they need to be able to apply their academic learning in a real life workplace. And I think the complementary skills that industry can offer to academic institutions to enable that to happen, I think, shouldn't be overlooked. And we certainly do a lot of work with institutions around the country to ensure that they're leveraging the content that we can provide. I think the final thing, and you know, as an L&D guy, right, I should really talk about this. The final thing is, let's not forget the learner, right? So, and putting the learner at the center of the learning experience. And if you see, what have we got? We've got about 200 people in the room here, but and they're business leaders, but we're all learners. We're all constantly trying to build our capability. And I think it is incumbent on us as leaders and learners to kind of lead by example when it comes to continuing our learning journey. Our own data, our own Work Trend Index, has indicated that 76% of people will remain in a company longer if they're given the opportunity to grow and develop within that organisation.
That just about wraps things up for what's been a marathon episode of the Growth Podcast. I would obviously like to plug our website, cbi.org.uk, where we've got a digital skills toolkit and plenty more content besides to help you answer the skills challenges, as well as more of a breakdown of what the budget means for your business. Otherwise, let me say thank you to both Katie Ricina and Matthew Percival for talking to me, and a big thank you to all of our listeners for tuning in. You'll hear more from me and my co-host Joe will be back on the next episode of the Growth Podcast. If you like what you heard today, please like and subscribe to our podcast channel. Until the next time, goodbye.